B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
And it's just, I don't know if they're grasping the, all right, learn the lesson here. Mm-hmm. Your opponent has five fouls. You pump fake them. Go into them. Don't go away from them. And the tired part might be a big part of it.
And the other part of this, Brett got teed up last night. And I forget the foul that he was arguing. It wasn't Josh Richardson being knocked down. I forget which one it was.
It was one of those things with Joel.
It was down, okay.
Yeah, where the guy, and then it bounced off of somebody's foot. It was Joel.
Well, Brett, I knew he was getting teed up because he left his normal area of the bench to walk down the sideline and go get right in the ref's face. And as soon as I saw that, I went, oh, Brett's going to get teed up right here. And good on him for fighting for his players. But it didn't seem to do anything for the team, because Joel Neto got fouled multiple times on the baseline. And it's not why they lost or anything like that. But still, usually you do that because you want to fight for your players. It seemed like the refs just wanted to ignore Brett even more so after that. Because Joel Neto got fouled on the baseline. You saw another play where Tobias Harris got fouled. There was no call. Joel Embiid a couple times. It wasn't why they lost, but sometimes that can also be a turnoff. Yeah, you're showing your players that you want to fight for them, but the refs seem to turn even more of a blind eye to a lot of it.
You know what? Another thing that I noticed too in this game, Bobby, is this. They, even with fouls, they don't finish through the foul.
Yeah.
It's like they play for the foul, yes, and then the ball just flops around somewhere.
There are few and far between guys that do that. Lou Williams is still one of the best in the league, where after contact, he'll still get a shot off, and he'll have his body in control. I often say this, Trey, and people make fun. I'll say, man, he's a really good layup shooter. He's in the NBA. Everybody should be able to shoot.
Right.
I'm talking about after contact, after always having your body in control. And you're right. There might be a push-off, and it's just like the ball flails. Like, you're trying to sell the foul more than I'll play through the foul.
Yeah.
You know, I'm big on playing through the foul. Whether they call it or not, get yourself there. Anticipate they're not going to call it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, oftentimes they're selling so much that it's the flailing, it's throwing the ball in the air, and then when it doesn't get called, it's just a careless turnover.
Oh, man, that's irritating.
No, you're right. That's a good point, though.
I hate it. It's laziness is what it is. Finish the play!
Yeah, IQ, basketball IQ and the laziness are the two things that you know, really stick out to me when it's something that bothers me. And this team has it once in a while, and it bothers me.
610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. You are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPN Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast. 7 o'clock hour brought to you by Univest Bank. Are you frustrated by escalating HR costs and legislative compliance? There's a simple solution. It's time for Univest Employee Benefits. Visit univest.net to set up your free benefits analysis today. Got a bunch of plates spinning here, so to speak. One is the 76ers game last night. Ben Simmons missed the game for the most part. He only played 10 minutes after hitting the ground hard on one possession, and then a possession or two later ended up trying to put the ball on the floor, driving to the block, and put his shoulder into, I forget who it was for the Jazz, and they're calling it a mild sprain of his right shoulder. Left the game with some shoulder soreness, got checked out. They're calling it a mild sprain of the AC joint in his right shoulder. So he only played 10 minutes. Joel Embiid, you could tell, got tired as the game went on, so we'll continue to talk about that game. But we're also talking some football today with Carson Wentz, because I'm hearing a lot of the debate about how good Carson Wentz really is. And it really got an exclamation point put on it yesterday when Chris Sims of NBC Sports put out his latest quarterback ranking. And he had Jacoby Brissett and Dak Prescott ranked ahead of Carson Wentz, and Drew Brees, who has only played in, what, three games so far this season? Right behind Carson Wentz. Wentz out of the top 10, and he's in at number 11, Carson Wentz is, followed by Drew Brees, but just before him is Jacoby Brissett and Dak Prescott. So I wanted to give people the opportunity today through our Twitter poll to say, how would you grade Carson Wentz's performance so far this year? And the reason I just want to talk about Carson today is because, you know, a lot of us, you know, you watch the game, you watch the highlights after, you might watch the game again. I know we all watch the game at least twice. And then you look at the coach's film, in case there's anything really in question that you need that other camera angle for, like the Nelson Aguilar play against the Cowboys in Dallas. Just looking at Carson Wentz's performance, most of us here had him at a B or an A. Trey, you had him at an A.
Mm-hmm.
Bob, you were erring on the side of A.
Yeah.
I guess. Jamie, you had him at a B.
Yeah. B plus if I was allowed.
B plus. No,
not allowed.
Because
of technicalities, it's a B.
Okay, there you go. So just looking at his performance, a lot of people do want to factor in the wide receiver performances here, and I get why, and I think that goes into everybody's thinking. The fact that they lead the league in drops still is abysmal. It used to be at a point where if Carson Wentz got the drops added in, then he would be a middle-of-the-pack quarterback. Well, now I believe he'd be actually a top-10 quarterback in the NFL in terms of completion percentage if you added that in, because he has raised his game enough to that point. But when you look at the guys around him, is Jordan Matthews going to have enough of an impact to make you look at this offense and go, ah, now they can score? I mean, they're scoring almost 25 points per game. They're they're around the top 10 in the NFL in that regard. But
is amazing, isn't it?
It's insane. You don't feel that way, but you got to keep in mind the running game has really done some great things for you.
I do think Jordan Matthews is going to have enough of an impact to still win the division.
Okay, he's going to open up the other side of the field.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of pathetic to say that, but yes, I do think he's going to have an impact.
But the real thing here is, what are the realistic expectations with Jordan Matthews coming back into this offense? Because again, as I referenced a couple minutes ago,
3 catches a game.
That, like, it's weird that I'll salivate over that.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, all I really want for this team is, at worst, a number 3 wide receiver.
I think he's like a 3-40 guy. I think those are fair expectations for him. He understands the offense. He has a rapport with Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. I think that's fair.
I couldn't agree more. You think of 300 yards is what he had a year ago in the 14 games that he played for the Eagles. Good hands in those situations. He got open.
Sometimes.
I remember early on, there was a big problem. But you think about it, Jordan Matthews is the best wide receiver this team has drafted since 2009 with Jeremy Maclin.
Wow. Yikes.
The two guys that are comparable are Nelson Agholor. Oh, wait. It gets better.
I had to say it like that.
And you know the other name? Second best receiver they've drafted since Jeremy Maclin? I'll wait for it.
You're not going to go Huff.
Jeremy Bloom.
Jeremy Bloom. He was before Maclin.
You're not talking skiing. You're talking football. Jeez. Sheldon Gibson? Cool. Who we got? I don't even know.
Yeah.
This is great. I knew everyone would forget this guy. Riley Cooper.
Rightfully so.
Think about it. Okay, hold on. Let's just
Florida man himself.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay, think about it for a second. I'm sorry. Jeremy Maclin in 2009, 1,000-yard receiver in his career.
Good player. Good player.
Okay, then Riley Cooper. Then Marvin McNutt.
University of Cincinnati. I'll never forget.
Why would you remember that?
Because like every wide receiver that comes into town, I try and talk myself into him.
Okay, that's nice.
I try.
All right, then your boy Josh Huff, good old Hollow Point Huff. Then Jordan Matthews, Nelson, you like that one? Nelson Agholor, Mack Hollins, Shelton Gibson, and then J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Wow.
What a cast of characters.
Wow.
So I understand trying to evaluate Carson Wentz, and really it's not just a Carson Wentz issue, it's an Eagles issue, just in terms of not having any idea how to draft a wide receiver. And like Jordan Matthews, the first 3 years of his career, pretty solid. 900 yards, an average per season, about 7 touchdowns per season, a little over that. Like, some good numbers.
Yeah.
Traded away for Ronald Darby. All right? Then you look at a guy like DeSean Jackson, and Chip Kelly character didn't like his attitude, shipped him out of town. Like, those are some talented wide receivers. Jeremy Maclin, same type of thing. Some talented wide receivers that weren't allowed to flourish here. They were moved on from, maybe prematurely. So what are they going to do now? Jordan Matthews comes in, hopefully has 3 catches a game. I mean, the crazy thing that I pointed out the stat last year, he led the team in yards per reception last year with 15 yards per reception.
Yeah.
15 yards per reception.
Right. 20 for 300? Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think about other guys that were added into the bunch. You think about other guys that are trying to have an impact here, like Alshon Jeffery, who's coming off his worst game as an Eagle, talking about the 3 drops on third down, who is having a career low in yards per reception at 10. This is a guy you're supposed to be able to throw the ball up to, and he comes down with it, and Carson doesn't have that trust factor with him. Certainly doesn't have it with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, although the other argument that's coming out for him is that the plays he's in on now, the snaps that he plays, they're all run plays, and he's just there to block, which is never a good thing to say about a second-round pick. I mean, Jordan Matthews is a second-round pick. He had 3 good years to his career to start out with the Eagles, came back last year for his second stint, and actually looked okay. If he could just replicate that type of offense, that type of production in this offense, I'm a happy camper.
Well, the write-up on Whiteside was that he's strong.
I haven't seen it.
Put him out there, let him run, but.
Well, but how about put him out there and
I got to fall on the sword real quick. Marvin McNutt was from Iowa. I was way off on Cincinnati.
What the hell are you doing, man?
I'm sorry.
Now, what are you? We need the rest of the day off.
My bad.
But again, Marvin McNutt. Like, yeah. What's the next time?
No, but JJ's big strength was, or his big positive was strength.
He was strong.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Box
catch
out.
The ball in traffic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Box out, go
pick
up and get
stuff up
it.
And put it down.
So where is that?
That's a great question, Mark.
Where is that skill?
And you know what's like weird is he did show a little bit of separation on that game-winning touchdown that he dropped. Like, he was open.
Yeah, he was there.
He was open.
It hit him in the hands.
Yeah.
That game-winning
just
touchdown
squeeze the
that
ball.
He didn't have.
Yeah,
that,
right.
The one that he didn't have.
That game-winning opportunity that he had.
There's been 2 game-winning opportunities that have just been dropped this year.
Yeah.
2.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking
Atlanta and Lions.
7-2. Yeah, they could be 7-2.
It's unbelievable.
And, yeah, we'd be. But the Jordan Matthews thing, I equated it to baseball. You know how they show the chart of where a guy hits? And, you know, like 60% to the left side of the infield, and then it gets a little shallower, and, uh-huh. and it shows you why they do the shift, teams do the shift. With the Eagles, their offense, it's like whatever side that Mac Hollins is on, there's nothing there.
Mm-hmm.
So the defense can just shift all the way over here. Mm-hmm. Well, now at least you have a little bit of a blue area over there where, oh, yeah, Carson does look over there like about 10% of the time. At least it puts something in the defense's head.
Exactly.
You know, and that's fine.
And we're grading Carson Wentz today. You know what, Sam, real quick, let's get a Twitter poll up to here, because now is an opportunity for people to grade Carson Wentz. All right? You have a bye week. You have all the games to digest here. You can look at how he's played, just individually, how he has played this season. We're seeing how people are grading Carson Wentz today. Sam, what do you have for us?
Our Twitter poll is brought to you by Window Nation. Take advantage of Window Nation's 50% off sale on all style windows, plus no down payment with no payments and no interest for 12 full months. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com. This morning we asked what everybody would grade Carson Wentz so far this season. We have just under 1,000 votes and it still remains the same. 70% say B.
So the majority are still at 70%.
Yes. And then
B, excuse me, yeah.
Second is still tied, but now both at 14% instead of 13%.
So the A and C's?
Yes.
Are there any D's?
2% say D. They're the trolls.
Those bastards. Yeah. Those are the foals.
We discard
people.
Them.
That, exactly. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. Oh, we got Mike and Del Rand coming up. And you know what? In a little bit, we're going to be joined for the first time ever, making his Farzetta and Trey in the Morning debut, Colby Cohen of NBC Sports Philadelphia. Flyers in action tonight. Carter Hart, you would have to assume, gets back in net after a 33-save performance.
Yeah.
Come on! Get some Flyers talk going. Coming up in a few areas. Oh, and at 7:30, we have the latest rumor for a wide receiver to be added to the Philadelphia Eagles. 7:30, we'll release that.
Ooh.
Time of the Fanatics, 7:12.
Farzetta and Trey in the Morning. The Fanatic.
That's a nice new twist for you there, Trey.
What's that?
What do you mean, what's that? The drop in it? I like it. Mike and Del Rand, what's up, homie?
What's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Good, man.
Really confused. Jordan Matthews is like putting a Band-Aid on a slit throat. I don't really understand what they think. I mean, Carson Wentz, maybe, you know, like their friends. Okay, cool. Listen, you had an opportunity to get a lot of different guys. Josh Gordon was gift-wrapped, put on your front step. And you went out and you signed Jordan Matthews. What's the matter? Todd Pinkston wasn't available?
I get it. And look, I am not at all looking at Jordan Matthews as a savior. But you have 2 wide receivers that are getting snaps that aren't getting targeted at a historically awful rate. So I'm happy just to see anybody that has familiarity can come in after week 9 and at least be on the same page as a quarterback.
All right, but that's my point. So that's where we talk about our coaches can develop young talent. You know, there are guys that need to tell Carson Wentz, throw them the ball. I, at this point in the season, are we Super Bowl contenders? If we think we are, then you should have made a move for a guy that's going to make a difference. If you don't think you are, then Mac Collins, Ortega Whiteside, and Greg Ward need to get thrown at. No matter how painful it's going to be, at some point you got to just put your foot down and try to grow your talent And the only way you're going to do that is by continually trying. Because if not, I don't see how we're going to be able to turn around this team's roster in the next few years, utilize Carson Wentz, you know, beginning of the prime of his careers with the way our with the way the contracts are and just who we have left. I'm just really confused. We're stuck in the middle of two situations, and we got to decide what boat we want to jump on.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to hold on to being a Super Bowl contender, or do we want to realize that it's time to turn to the younger guys and just go through the growing pains? Because, you know, LeSean McCoy's not walking through the door. You know, Jason Avant's busy with the trampoline park. I don't know who I'm going to grab from the future to the past to try to help turn this thing around.
Harold Carmichael. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Harold Carmichael's available.
Yeah, he's still
whenever around. I talk to him, he's like, yeah, I'm just a little bored.
Quick chilling. Doing his thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Quick out the booth.
Yeah. You know, DeSean Jackson needs like 200 more yards, not even, and he passes Mike Quick for third all-time in receiving yards on the Eagles' all-time list. How about that one, huh? 610-632-0975. Coming up, like I said, around 7:30, we'll tell you the next name that could be the rumor out there because the guy's putting a feeler out. Let's put it that way. But first up, you know, we got another Flyers game going on tonight, and on the line with us right now from NBC Sports Philadelphia, former NHLer himself and local boy Dunwell, Colby Cohen from NBC Sports Philly. What's up, my brother?
What's going on, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. We're a little geeked up, Colby. We're a little geeked up. Carter Hart, 33 saves most recently for the Flyers. Every time he plays well, it's going to be about, oh, is he going to hit a stride? And every time he plays bad, it's, oh, the guy was overhyped. What have you seen from Carter Hart so far in net?
I mean, I see a guy that is going to be the goaltender for the Flyers for a long time. And I see a young kid, though. And that's the thing that we all have to remember. When there's a guy who's, you know, barely gotten his feet wet in this league, the NHL is such a tough league. And, you know, he's a young kid, and there is going to be ups and downs. But when I watch him, his skills, and then when I listen to him and I see the way he handles these situations, Philadelphia has been starving for a goaltender since I was a little kid, and the Flyers got swept by the Detroit Red Wings in the playoffs. And so he knows this stuff. So seeing how he has an off night or he struggles, but then he's able to mentally get it back together and come back and have that big win that he had the other night where he really kept the Flyers in the game for two periods. I mean, these are signs of a guy who has all the tools to really be a star.
Yeah, Colby, I just got to tell you, we're getting a little echo on your phone there, but the next thing I want to ask you about has to do with Travis Konecny. And he seems to be the type of guy that Philadelphia really can get behind because he plays with a lot of attitude. And Philly, I mean, if it's not just pucks, it's about the attitude. And Travis Konecny certainly has that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's been a guy who the Flyers have needed to take the next step. And, you know, I heard your last caller talking about the young players for the Eagles, that it's sort of time to fire up and get going. And, you know, Konecny's 22 years old. He's in his third year. His game is maturing. And because of the way his game is maturing and because of the way he's taking care of things defensively, and he's not making as many high-risk plays in the neutral zone, he's being rewarded offensively. He's got the puck on his stick more. And, you know, he's been really good. And I would expect to see him keep it up. A lot of people have asked, is this just a hot streak or is this what we can expect? And, you know, I have no reason to think that he won't keep this up. I mean, the kid's skilled. He plays with a ton of edge. And he's got no problem scoring a goal and then punching you in the face.
Colby, a lot of the questions I think with this team come down to the defense, and you got some young defensemen, obviously with Provorov and Gostisbehere, Sanheim, those guys. What are you seeing from them? I think everyone's looking for Provorov and Gostisbehere to take that next step. Are you seeing that so far this season?
You know, I'm seeing a little bit of ups and downs. I'm seeing, you know, I'd like to see more consistency, and I think that's what you're talking about here, but you know, that's why the Flyers got Matt Niskanen, because he's that guy who's been around. He steadies the blue line. You know, last game he ends up with a couple of big assists, but he makes a lot of contributions away from the puck. He settles things down. He's also a great partner for any of those three guys that you just mentioned. So, you know, I know that we've seen some good and some bad out of a couple of our young guys, but at the end of the day,
when you see the good and you see the ability to do it, that's how you know it's there. At that point, it's up to our coaching staff and it's up to our management staff to make sure that they're putting these guys in the right spots and that these guys are continuing to develop. And so far, it's definitely had its bumpy moments, but I got to tell you something. We live in an atmosphere where we're hyper-focused on that type of thing, but these are good NHL defensemen. I mean, there's growing pain, but these are good players, and I do expect some of these guys to really get things on track.
What's the expectation for a guy like Sam Moran? Because we've been waiting a long time to see what he can do at the NHL level.
Yeah, I mean, Mark, that's a little bit of a tough one.
Yeah.
Because he's had such injury troubles, and you know, they put him in the other night and he really struggled. But I'll be honest with you, after not having played the first whatever 10 games of the season, to put him out there is tough, because you really can't replicate a game in practice. You just can't. I mean, there is just nothing like the speed of an NHL game. So for me, I think the true test, guys, right now he's in Lehigh Valley on a conditioning assignment. You're allowed to send a guy down without waivers for conditioning purposes. And I think he can play down there for something like either 7 games or 10 days or something along those lines. I don't know the exact amount. Mm-hmm. But after he plays those games, when he comes back up, when he gets another chance, I do think that will be it. He'll need to perform if he's going to stick around once he gets that chance. Because you're right. I mean, it's time for him. I know the circumstances are unfortunate, but at the end of the day, it's professional sports, and you only get so many chances.
Yeah. What's the worst injury you ever played with? Because I'm sitting here with a man named Trey Thomas, who you know. You followed the Eagles, obviously, your whole life. And hockey players, they're never hurt. They just might have a boo-boo, and they just keep on playing. I mean, now Sam Moran has...
a different game. I totally respect that.
Well, trust me, every time I see a guy get hit in the NFL, I cringe, and I'm like, man, we got to get these guys some more pads on their legs, because that's got to hurt.
What's the worst thing you ever played through?
So I broke my foot at one point in my career. I took a slap shot off the foot, and my foot was so swollen that the x-ray was negative, but I knew something was wrong. And at the time, I was playing down in the American Hockey League for Bruce Cassidy, who is now the coach of the Boston Bruins, and he thought I was being soft, and he made me play. I literally played a game in Norfolk with a broken foot. I barely could walk. Trust me, not my proudest moment. I could barely skate, and you know, a couple days later, still couldn't walk. So I finally had to get on the phone with my agent, and I got an MRI, and the MRI showed that my foot was broken. So, I mean, it's there's no time to be injured sometimes in the NHL, and that was definitely not a fun moment for me.
That's awesome, right there. That's a good story.
Colby Cohen, NBC Sports Philadelphia, pre and post and intermission, obviously intermission live with the Flyers. Thanks for coming on with us, man. We'll talk to you down the road of the season.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Colby. Right,
thanks, Colby. Appreciate it, man. See that? Hockey players.
Oh, yeah. You got to respect hockey players.
Drag a broken leg up the ice if it means they can keep playing.
Broken foot. Just like, what? Spit on it. Let's go. And the coach was like, man, come.
What's with you?
Yeah. Put that skate on. Let's go.
So swollen, the x-rays were negative.
That happened to me.
Really?
I broke an ankle. I was playing basketball and went for my ankle was huge, and I went, and they, no, you're good. And I said to Don, I was like, wow, that's surprising. I could have sworn. And 3 days later, I was at work at the Daily News. I'm walking around. I'm like, all right, I got to get this better. And they call me 3 days later. Like, can you come back in? And I'm like, sure. And I had a baby at the time, and I walk in the parking lot. Literally, they had a wheelchair waiting for me in the parking lot. They reread it. It was broken in two places, but it was so swollen they couldn't see it all that well. Yeah.
That nasty.
Those things happen.
That nasty. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. Without further ado, I mentioned this earlier as in a name that could be available or is available, I should say, for the Eagles. And Jordan Matthews, already back here in Philly, a third stand as we've talked about. This name came up yesterday as one of the many people that have been available for a couple of years now. But Dez Bryant put out a feeler yesterday.
Put your X up.
Dez Bryant put out a feeler yesterday saying that basically he wouldn't be good to go for all 16 games and he wouldn't be a Pro Bowler or anything like that, but he knows he could come out and still help a team win as a third target. Like, I don't know if I've ever had a more if I've ever read a more mild take from a former athlete than that. Like, hey, look, I'm not going to come out here. Like, T.O. will still say he'll come out and, like, lead the league in receiving, right?
Yeah.
Chad Johnson will still say, Ocho Cinco will say, I'll come out and I'll lead the league in receiving. Dez Bryant is like, I'll help you as the closest thing to a tight end a wide receiver could be. Like, that's like the most modest, mild take an athlete has ever had about himself. Dez Bryant wants to come back and be a basic third target for an NFL offense, Trey. Your thoughts?
That he's trying to tone it down so someone will give him a shot.
That's all he needs.
And then as soon as he gets in there, I am Dez Bryant!
Give me the rock!
Yeah. Give me the damn ball.
It's genius. You make a couple of catches, yeah. A lot better than you thought, aren't I? That's a good place to be in.
He just turned 31.
Mm-hmm.
He's been in the league, I believe, 2 years now. And he wants to just kind of get his foot in the door again.
Yeah.
And I got to give him credit because I think he's playing possum, basically.
Yeah.
Of course.
Let him in
yeah.
and see what he can do for you at 31 years old. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, be a little shorthanded for you.
Mm-hmm.
But here's my issue. Jordan Matthews, 27 years old, was at least in his prime, and in his prime, 4.4 speed. Dez Bryant was a 4.5 guy. And that's like 10 years ago.
Mm.
So if he does come back in the league, I understand saying that you're a third target, whatever you might be, but you're basically glorifying yourself as a tight end.
So you're giving you about 4.6, you're saying? About 4.6, 4.7?
Probably right now, yeah.
He was one guy that his last year in the NFL, and we talked about it on the air, he was shot. You could see, yes. Yeah, you were watching, you're like, wow, Dez Bryant just isn't the Dez Bryant he used to be. He couldn't get open. Mm. He couldn't make separation. He couldn't catch the hard catches that he usually made. He was one guy that I was watching and saying, oh, man, he's done. Like, he's done. So I don't know what 2 years off is going to
so
do.
So the question with the Eagles and if a wide receiver is worth it or not, the question comes back to, is he better than Mac Collins?
Yo, he is better than Mac Collins.
Now, I'm not saying I would sign him, but he's better than Mac Collins.
But here's the deal. Like, at least one guy has a track record of doing something in the NFL.
Yeah.
But here's the other part of it. The question that we're asking
he's
today,
also a bit of a nut.
Oh, he's crazy. Oh,
yeah.
But the other part of it is if you do criticize Carson Wentz and you say he's anything below a B, then you're looking at Carson as being a big reason that Mac Collins and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside have not gotten looks this year. Because part of a quarterback is to get everybody involved, right? So you can have that threat of everybody on the field. But if those guys aren't getting open, well, then what are you supposed to do if you're the quarterback? So then the argument becomes, if you're a Carson hater or whatever, is that he is not getting those guys involved. Trey said yesterday, sometimes you got to throw guys open.
Mm-hmm.
But if Carson doesn't trust the guy he's throwing to, how's he supposed to throw him open?
Yeah.
And Mac Collins isn't a guy that I would trust. J.J. Arcega isn't a guy I would trust right now.
Look, in this day and age, the way that the rules are for defenses and how you're not allowed to touch wide receivers and how you can't, you know, outside of 5 yards and all of that, it's a passing man's game. You cannot tell me that a professional NFL wide receiver can't get open at some point during a game, that you can't design a play that he's open and you throw it to him.
You have to know the route to get it.
Well, I know. That's the crazy thing for me, and I can't get over this, is these guys are not even getting targeted.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
This is historic, ladies and gentlemen.
It's historic. That's a great way of putting it.
I've never seen anything like this before.
Nope.
Never seen anything like this before, where guys aren't even getting looked at. I mean, we talked about the receiving numbers themselves, just in terms of actual receptions, and DeSean Jackson having more receptions than Mac Collins and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the last 6 weeks combined, with his one reception after coming back for the first time really since week 2, week 1, whatever you want to call it. It's amazing. It's like impressive. I've never seen this before.
Never.
I'm not leaving any stone unturned. And Jordan Matthews coming back isn't any type of like, game changer moment. And I am not, like, when we were talking to Mike and Del Ran a minute ago, he was talking about how, yeah, guys, we had opportunities like Josh Gordon, for instance, that could have come in and actually had a big impact on the offense. Now I just want something to change. I just want a little bit of an impact. One little ripple in the pond is all I'm asking for at this point. And Jordan Howard or Jordan Matthews does at least give that to you because he's better than guys that aren't getting looked at by the quarterback. 610-632-0975. Graf in media, what's up, brother?
Hey, guys. So, yeah, the Jordan Matthews thing, we talked about this yesterday. As long as he has more catches than Matt Collins and Nelson Aguilar, we're going to be all right.
Yeah.
So that's where I look at it. And the Dez Bryant thing, you tell me, Dez Bryant over Matt Collins?
Like, Matt Collins isn't even getting looked at. So it's like, yeah, you would go in the direction of Matt. Or you would go in the direction of a guy like Dez Bryant just to see what he had. Like, I'll bring him in for a tryout.
Mm-hmm.
Like, seriously, no stone left unturned.
Oh yeah, I'd definitely bring him in for a workout.
See that? Trey knows.
Bringing him.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no denying that. I don't think so at all. I would love if Chad Johnson came back though. He's one of my favorite all the time, dude.
With the gold teeth and all, Ocho Cinco.
His feet were stupid quick, too. That was, like, his best part of his game, coming off the line. Like, you just double up on somebody real quick, cross the legs. But, Trey, you asked me a question yesterday, and unfortunately I didn't get to answer it. I only got to answer it on Twitter, so I'd like to try and answer it on the phone if I could.
Yeah.
So when you talk about leadership in the military, right, like, it's always going to be hard to try and compare that to the civilian side of the house, no matter what anyone says.
Mm-hmm.
But you've had me thinking about it now for an entire day. So I'm going to try and give you the best answer I possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why leaders in the military are so effective is because they are a consistent thorn in the side of every individual that they lead, right? So their whole entire goal is to make sure that you are uncomfortable. Because comfortability in the United States Marine Corps, from at least what I've seen and what I know, leads to laziness, leads to mistakes, which ultimately leads to someone's life being put on the line and people dying.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a little harder when you start trying to compare that to sports, but at the same time, like, okay, both people have an end goal. And the reason why I brought up the Patriots in my argument is because the Patriots front office and a guy like Bill Belichick, his whole entire purpose to his mission is to make sure that people are not comfortable with 6 Super Bowls. I'd rather have them be comfortable winning a Super Bowl every year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I see the problem as being Howie Roseman. Look, we said this already. These guys get fat and sit on their laurels and enjoy the celebration, and we continue to have people in our locker room that will do the same over and over again, and no one actually gets – there's no punishment. Bill Belichick's not afraid to cut a guy like Nelson Aguilar. He's not afraid to cut a guy like Matt Collins, right? The United States military is not afraid to NJP a guy who gets way too comfortable and makes a mistake. So it's – I look at it from that perspective, and I just say to myself, like, we're living in an era of football right now where we won a Super Bowl, and the real question is, how does the Philadelphia Eagles organization move forward from here? Because you have your Super Bowl. Is that all you wanted? Did you just want to be the first organization in Philadelphia Eagles history to win one? How many do you actually want to win? Because if you want to win more, you have to drop these dudes that are way too comfortable. Because comfortability is bringing down the plan and the overall goal of the mission itself. And leaders, the only way leaders can get into it is if they make people uncomfortable. And I don't know how you do that with an NFL union, because you can't just be waking up guys at 7 o'clock in the morning. Tell them to show up to train. Tell them to show up to the installation for a muster. But at the same time, maybe you could just stop being so friendly. That's one of my biggest problems with Dougie P. Like, leaders in the military, they're respected, but they're abrasive. They're not your friend. That's not their goal in life. Their goal is to train you and make you the most effective and efficient weapon on the face of the planet, right? So Dougie P's problem right now is he has a locker room of guys that are his friends. And I've never really been one to appreciate that, because how do you actually maintain respect?
Here, here, Graf. Here, here.
That's
Graf.
The answer I was looking
see
for.
See that? There Graf, you thanks, go. Brother. Yeah, thanks, appreciate you, man.
Yeah, take it easy, guys.
All right, buddy.
So that's that. See that?
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, you're ready, right? Everyone steer clear of Trey at the break. He wants to hit something. 610-632-0975. We got Rob at Delco. Open lines after that. 610-632-0975. Coming up, we got a great tweet regarding Matt Collins. And we're going to get an update on our Twitter poll. Time at the Fanatic is 7:43.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. The Fanatic.
Got to give a shout out to a guy that I think is going to be the best scout in the Eagles scouting department. Nick Scotto reaches out to us on Twitter.
Nice.
And he says that his buddy threw Matt Collins a beer right to his hands in the Super Bowl parade.
Uh-huh.
Matt Collins dropped it.
Ooh.
That's how he knew he was going to be a bust. See, we're on the story. People, our audience, they tweet us what's what. They know what's what. They always reach out to us. They're on top of it when it comes to the scouting department. That's what they need.
I have far more problems of dropping a beer than that of having bad hands.
610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. Rob and Delco, thanks for holding. What's on your mind today, Rob?
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I'm just curious. Carson came to the team with the claim that he was going to be the next Brett Favre, the gunslinger.
Yeah. And
where is that mentality when it comes to, I think you were just saying it earlier, throwing receivers open?
Like, yeah.
That's what Favre was known for, taking that chance. When are we going to see that?
Yeah, he also threw a lot of interceptions. I don't want to just ignore that, but up there in the most ever. But when it comes to a guy like Carson Wentz, yeah, that's kind of the same mentality that that the people talked about. And this year in particular, you really haven't seen it. It's like he doesn't trust his wide receivers to make any type of play for him. And I got to be honest with you, I never thought I'd ever look at a quarterback and go, oh, well, I get it. But with this receiving core, when Nelson Agholor and Alshon Jeffrey have the drop problems that they've had this year, and Nelson Agholor has an effort problem like he's had this year, I don't blame Carson for that. Like, I don't want him to give up on those guys, but I don't blame him for focusing more on Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz, Miles Sanders, because those guys haven't really been there for him when he's needed them most.
Right. I get that. I understand that. But what I'm saying is, from a targeting perspective, and I would lean on Trey for this, if he's not looking or at least attempting that way, don't defenses start to shift away and then it takes away the people that you actually can count on? Like, don't you almost have to throw the targets and make the passes just to keep them honest on the other side of the field?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's why you bring in a Jordan Matthews. I always figured that you should always just give them a shot. See if they can give them a chance to make the play. But, you know, he focuses everything to whatever side that everybody's on, and then you put Macklin and whoever else on Whiteside on the other side, and then you just don't even look over their way. But to me, it does look like the defense would shift over to that side.
Okay, and then last question for you. If we're not seeing JJ on the field, it means that he hasn't taken that next step to even get past Mac, right? Like, they're not going to publicly come out and say that, but that's what we have to infer from him just not even being on the field, yes?
I'm sorry, what was that question? That
being like, if JJ hasn't even made it back onto the field, if Mac's getting the majority of snaps, then JJ probably isn't even showing in practice that he's capable of being as bad as Mac has been on the field. Like, he's even worse, right?
Exactly.
Like, that's what we have to take away
from. Yeah, that's what you can take away from it, Daddy. You know, what are your other options? If you can't say, all right, well, Macklin, who else can I go to? And if Whiteside isn't even jumping over him to get on the field, then you have to assume that, you know, it just is what it is.
All right, fellas. Thanks for taking the call. Have a great day.
Thanks.
All right,
I'll say this. If Carson Wentz threw the ball to J.J. Arcega-Whiteside in the Lions game, and he came up, and Arcega-Whiteside came up with a drop when he could have come up with a game-winning touchdown, and then Carson said, well, forget it, I'm not looking his way anymore. Well, then shame on Carson. Because if you're going to say one thing to a veteran receiver like Alshon Jeffrey, hey, I'm coming right back to you, and you're going to say it three times after three drops, and you don't want to trust a second-round pick, a guy that's supposed to be able to do the same type of thing Alshon Jeffrey can do, but younger and a little faster, well, then shame on Carson. And look, I can understand if people are hating on Carson, that would be something they would look to. I can understand how you might look at the throw where he overthrew Alshon Jeffrey in the end zone against the Cowboys and what would have been a crucial score in that game. But what have they done as receivers, as young players like Arcega-Whiteside and Matt Collins, to tell Carson Wentz, you can trust me? What have they done in either practice? What have they done in the games to say, all right, you know what? I'm ready for my next my next opportunity.
Well, like you said, does say that they're eighth in the progression of whatever that's going on.
Oof.
So then, you know, he probably doesn't have time to even get back over to him, because, you know, at times Carson does seem a little skittish. At times when he's behind that line, because he doesn't want to take those big hits. So at times he gets a little skittish and he's like, all right, you know what? One, my first progression there. Second, all right, third, hey, I got to make something happen. You don't have time to work your way back over to the fourth and fifth progression.
Uh-huh. So Ertz, Goddard, Alshon, Sanders. How are you getting eighth?
I don't know.
Like, but it's not.
No,
you, it's
literally,
done.
He's behind done. A big V and Carson Wentz.
Like, you have to put in. Carson Wentz catching his own pass.
Yeah.
and Big V being lined up as a tight end and they go to him.
Literally. It's one of the most insulting things I've ever, and unintentionally. Like, Doug didn't mean to destroy him like that.
No, he did it.
And he destroyed him.
Doug thought he was saying something nice.
Yeah. To say he was the eighth option, I was like, that's the meanest thing I've ever heard a coach say.
I'm not so sure he didn't know what he was saying.
You think he's just sick of it, too?
I don't think it's the first time it's been said.
No, it's not. I've heard people say that he said that to them before that I know.
I mean, coach is sitting in there, and, oh, my God, we're getting nothing from him. He's like an eighth option anymore. I don't think it just came off the top of the head. I think it was, you know, said before in disgust.
He's behind Big V.
Trey, real quick, we're getting some questions about your latest lawnmower ad.
Yes.
The 2.0.
The 2.0.
Just from Twitter, somebody said to me, how do your balls thank you?
How do they thank me?
How do they thank you?
By presenting beautifully.
I think he just physically is presenting beautifully right now.
Yeah.
Yes. By the way, shout out to our boy, Gabe Kapler.
One of the three finalists.
Yeah, how about that?
With two other guys I don't really know. Yeah. So good luck.
Yeah, good luck to Gabe. He presents beautifully all
San
the time.
San Fran would be perfect for him.
Yeah, and people also, absolutely.
He could lube up with coconut oil, hop on his little bird scooter, live stream it on his GoPro camera while tweeting from his iPad. And
doing push-ups in McCovey Cove.
Yeah, exactly. Stop by Twitter headquarters, bust out a Q&A, and set the lineup.
He could live, you know, I picture him living on a yacht. Like, maybe not a yacht.
Like Captain Ron.
Yeah, either Captain Ron or like MacGyver. He had a houseboat. Remember that?
Houseboat, yeah.
Yeah, houseboat. Cool.
Yeah, houseboat's always intrigued me.
Yeah, I think Gabe Kapler could do that.
I could see him be a houseboat guy.
Yeah.
I'd love to try that.
Yeah. Cruise up to Alcatraz. Taking the sights.
I really appreciate Al Capone. He gets a bad rap. He saw what he wanted and he took it in life, and you have to respect that.
Sometimes you have to cut corners.
We're never going to stop on Gabe Kapler.
No, he fascinates me.
He's a fascinating character. 610-632-0975.
I hear you. I understand what you're saying. Makes sense.
610-632-0975. Coming up a little bit later, we got some Temple tickets to give away here. Temple battling Morgan State, the 1-0. Temple Owls taking on Morgan State Saturday at 2 p.m. at the Lee Corps Center. Dollar hot dog day at the game. Plus, bring a canned food item and save $5 on tickets. Visit owlstix.com. Can't miss that.
Pop quiz, Hop Shot. What's Morgan State's mascot?
Morgan State, moose.
It was an animal. Come on, Bob. Nothing?
Morgan State.
97.5 The Fanatic.